Welcome back to Pack Mentality. I'm Matt Banwart. My wife, Caitlin, and I own Red Wolf CrossFit in Huntington Beach, California. And we started this podcast with one goal in mind, and that was to make fitness education accessible, engaging, and effective for everyone. Today, we have David Rodriguez, a special Red Wolf member on the podcast today. He has a great story about how fitness has saved his life, and we're very excited to talk about it. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you.
So good to have you. So how long have you been with us at Red Wolf?
I think I showed up in November of 21.
So it's been a while. Dang, 3 years?
Lies. 22.
22. 22.
Still a while. But yeah, November of 22, because my sister was coming here and I just moved down to the area.
Yeah, I remember that. And then you came in and you fit right in, buddy. Mm-hmm. So good to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's dive right in, shall we?
Yeah.
And then we'll kind of get into the nitty gritty details later. But the question on everyone's mind is, if you're listening to this, is how did fitness save your life in the first place? So kind of walk us through what happened to you, because I know multiple things happened to you all at once.
Yeah. So the big one, I think the one that was the most direct, was I just had heart surgery earlier this year, and big strokes is that coming to the gym and the connections that the gym had, the connections got me to maybe one of the best surgeons that could do the surgery that I needed. So I guess I'll kind of tell that story. It's a story of like taking things seriously when your doctor tells you to do something. So I went in, I have migraines, I manage them and stuff, and they started getting worse. So I went in November of last year for that. And when I was getting checked out, my doctor was like, has anyone ever told you you have a heart murmur? I've heard the word heart murmur. I haven't heard anything too crazy about it. So I was like, no. And he was like, I'm not too worried about it, but I'm going to refer you to get an echocardiogram, which is like a pretty big thing. But again, I'd never heard of that. So I was like, I just didn't listen. I was like, he said he's not worried about it, so I'm not worried about it. Left it alone. And I was actually going to ask for like another one because I felt bad. I was like, all right, now I should do it. Ask for, because it expired. And that was like in the beginning of March. I got two tattoos in between that time, both on my left arm near the heart. So during the first one, throughout the whole appointment, I was getting like sharp pain in my chest.
Wow.
And I just thought I was like, oh, we're hitting a nerve. We're doing something. It sucks. And then I went back for the second one in January. And that one, same exact thing. But after I had like a dull chest pain. I just had it like it would only happen when I laid down. And then it would be only when I was laying on my side. And then it was anytime I would get up or get down. And then it was just like showing up randomly. So that happened over the next like 2 weeks. And I said, okay, I woke up one day, my hands were both above my head and they were both numb. So I said, okay, that's probably not good. Let's go to urgent care tonight.
Yeah.
Went to urgent care. They did an EKG because you say chest pain, like EKG, let's do it. And he came in and he said, I think you should go to the ER. We were like, okay, why? He's like, I think the machine's broken, but it's telling me you're having a heart attack right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seriously?
So that I know. That's what we're like. I'm like, I've been feeling this for 2 weeks. How have I been having a 2 week heart attack? I don't know. And so we drove ourselves there. And once we got there, the nurse was like, no, if you had a heart attack, he wouldn't have let you leave. He would have called the ambulance. So we think he was just trying to scare us into, again, not doing what I did the first time and actually go. But went to the ER, got the EKG, did the echocardiogram. It was the night that the hospital was changing systems. So I got there at 11. By 2, everything was down. No software, no charting, nothing. So we just sat there for a long time and they're like, all right, we're going to admit you until we can get everything back up and we can figure out what's going on. And hung out there. Cardiologist came in. Didn't know who he was because he didn't really introduce himself. He came in like a day or two later in the morning. Comes in hot. He's like, hey, you have this wrong with your heart. It's a problem. you know, your heart's working too hard, it's getting bigger, you need to have heart surgery. And so we're freaking out, and I think I have to give him an answer right there. So I was like, can we talk? And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll come back later. Doesn't come back for like a day or two. And at that point, it was mainly freaking out because I was supposed to get married that May. This is March.
Yes.
Getting married in May, and we had a honeymoon. So after kind of like the initial freak out from him, he came back and we were like, can we get married? Like, how urgent, how necessary is it? Because he had just been like very adamant. And when we told him that we want to get married, he was like, oh, okay. Okay, you can get married. You can do the honeymoon. You can wait that long. So he was a nice guy. He just, you know, came in hot. And so that was March. Got diagnosed, basically had a bicuspid valve, kind of like Sean, but Sean said his were welded. It was, everyone's got three flaps.
Mm-hmm.
He said his, two of them were welded and one was not. So that created two valves. Mine was actually made with a cut right down the middle.
Okay.
And because of that, they started falling inwards on themselves. So usually it's just open, close. They started now going inwards on the way back, meaning some blood that was going out started coming back in.
Oh, I see.
And because of that, it's like the body saying, we're not getting enough blood. Work harder. So the heart starts working harder. And that's where the heart murmur came from, was the sound of it returning. And so thankfully, I think because of CrossFit, all these things, they were like, your heart's still working good. Your infarction rate, whatever it is, like the amount that it's pumping, it's still like at a good percentage. You can't wait till next year. It's going to start degrading. That's why you need to do this sooner rather than later. And so then we were like, all right, we're going to get married, go on a honeymoon, do all this. It'll be great. This is going to answer like a couple different things, I guess.
No, please keep going.
Because I came in, I got out of that and I was like, all right, that's it. Like, I got to stop everything. I got to keep it, you know, I'm out of the game until I get this surgery. And then with the recovery. So I came in to tell you, hey, like, gave you the situation, was like, I don't want to cancel it. Can I pause it? Can I do this stuff? Cause I was like adamant. I was like, no, this is going to happen. It's going to fix things. And then I'm going to be back.
Yeah.
And you were automatically like, so sympathetic, supportive. You're like, that, what the hell? Like, this is crazy. Very, very quick to be like, yes, we got you covered. Not only are we going to pause it, I'm still going to give you, we're going to find scaled workouts for you to do that won't mess with your heart, but still give you either the satisfaction of working out or the exercise that you still want to be doing. And then beyond that, you told me about Sean. You're like, one of our other members had already done this before. Two, one of our former members is a heart surgeon. And so, because at that point I was just like, oh, the hospital I was at, I guess I'm just going to use them. So when you told me that, I was like, all right, let's look into him.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Anthony Caffarelli, found out he works at Hoag.
Yep.
And beyond that, he was, again, the exact surgeon, the surgeon that does the exact procedure that I needed done.
Isn't that crazy?
It's there's so much in this that's like everything lined up as it needed to be.
Yeah. And just for context, everyone just listening, is that Sean, one of our other members who was on the podcast last year, had a very similar valve situation, just like how David explained, and Dr. Caffarelli took care of Sean for us. And then, so just a background, Dr. Caffarelli was former chief of surgery at Stanford University. He was in the Marine Corps. He's an absolute badass and one of the nicest people you ever meet. And he was an OG 5 a.m.er at Red Wolf for years. And then, you know, I still have his personal number. He texted me after the surgery, actually, and let me know that you were okay.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I got a personal text from him. And so, yeah, he's definitely a good person to know.
Oh, yeah. First thing I did when he came in, he was like, I got to thank Matt and Caitlin for being my referral agent because I was the second one coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's funny too that you say he's 5 a.m. because when I was there in the ICU, my wife showed up the next day. And I guess the nurses were kind of just like not poking fun, but she was like, oh, is he here? And she was like, oh, everything's off the table. We're not going to know anything until he gets back from his 5 a.m. run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how it works. And so to see it still going on, mm-hmm. still doing that. But yeah, Sean was a little more emergency, a little more immediate than mine was.
Yeah, his had to be done immediately.
Exactly. Mine would have ended up being in his spot. Now, maybe not when I turned 50. Maybe basically it was like, if they didn't find this now, most likely it was going to be at my first heart attack or when I had the rupture that he was in danger of having.
Wow. And that could have killed you, which could have killed you.
Yeah. Yeah. That I didn't realize till we were sitting in the room waiting for Caffarelli and they were playing videos and we saw like the aortic root aneurysm. And we were like, oh, okay, this is very serious. Because again, I if you don't know about heart stuff, you're not going to look up heart stuff unless it, kind of affects you. And so, yeah, you gave me that connection. I had to look him up. I switched my medical group for him because I was like, I see how good he is. I see how good Hogue is. I have, like, there's a reason. So I waited, got him in. And then when I got in, that's kind of throughout from March to May. I was ready to go back to the gym and start doing the workouts you gave me. And then 2 weeks later, I was back in the ER for a completely unrelated pain.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Completely unrelated.
I can't believe this happened.
And so basically, I just like was at work and then just like this intense pain was going on in like my stomach area. And so I was just like, I need to go. I thought, oh, it's something you can wait. It's not gonna be a problem. No, it hit a level. I needed to go. So I went, same thing. They just took me back right away because of the style of pain it was. And then they, I think, took a CT scan of the area and came back. That one was immediate. They were like, we need to take this out. It's, you have a mass. We need to get it out. We need to see what's up with it.
Man, so, your body is just trying to kill you.
I turned 30 this year, and I just kept saying, my warranty's up.
Yeah.
So my body's trying to get me out of here at this
point. Yeah.
But, it was wild. So I've learned a lot about blood stuff in this time. Excedrin, ibuprofen, those thin your blood out. That affects surgeries, besides, like, the do-or-die ones. Because they don't want to work on you if your blood's too thin, because then you can bleed out. It's just harder to deal with. So because of that, I had to wait a week. And again, it was something where when they gave me some meds and they got me on some stuff, the pain went away. So they're like, as long as it's pain is manageable, we're going to wait for the ibuprofen to wear off. Took a week, did the surgery, waited longer. I think I waited like a month or two for the biopsy. But after that, that was the end of April, mid of April. And then from the next month, my wife, who had been so, fiance at the time, had been so wonderfully supportive, but it was like, all right, we have 3 weeks to get married. So we had to finish all of the things that were going on. I mean, I don't know how your planning situation was. If you might be a lot better than we were, you might have already been planned out, months in advance, where the last month is less of a scramble and more of just, all right, cool, we made it.
Yeah.
That was not the case for us.
Yeah.
We procrastinated thinking, oh, we have 2-3 months, and then we lost those 2 months.
Yeah.
And so then that was at the beginning of May, saw the surgeon, finally got in with Caffarelli, and he came in, and he was like, we can't wait that long. Like, I know they told you can go on your honeymoon and stuff like that. I don't want to wait that long. Get married, and then we're going to do it right away.
Yeah.
So at that point, I'm listening to him. I'm like, whatever you say, man. You're the one that knows this the best. I trust you. And so, yeah, got married, modified our honeymoon. So we took a week off. Oh, we did it a week because we were going to go to Japan and Korea, and then came back and immediately went into pre-op, and then June 6th was in the operating room with him, waiting for him to do his thing.
So you survived cancer and a heart thing.
Oh, essentially. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
the biopsy came back. The biopsy came back 2 weeks later, and they were like, "We got it. It was cancerous." And I was just like, "What?"
Awesome. Just on top of it.
To be fair, they tell you a mass, they tell you a tumor, and your first thought, I think, usually is like, "Is this cancer or something like that?"
Yeah, yeah.
So they said, "Yeah," but again, they had gotten most of it. So luckily that. Like, then it became like, all right, well, what are my levels at? Am I going to need chemo? What's happening? So that was kind of an overlooming threat during the whole wedding planning process and surgery process.
Yeah.
Because near the end of it, I ended up finding out that I didn't need immediate chemo like a week or two before the pre-op was set up, because that was kind of going back and forth. Do I, you know, how immediate is it? Because they don't want to do heart surgery after, like, I have to wait a long time after chemo to do heart surgery because of the way it destroys your immune system. And again, this is where luckily everything was, you know, for all these terrible situations to come up, it was the best outcome for each one.
Oh, dude, 100%.
Kind of. Yeah.
I mean, you're back working out already.
Exactly.
I mean, you came back in August.
Yeah.
Or like late July, right?
August. Yes.
So after all that, you know, which happened in, started happening, what, in March?
Mm-hmm.
Now you're already back in the gym doing full-on CrossFit workouts. I mean, not full-on CrossFit.
No.
But you're cleared to be back in the gym training.
Exactly. I had a friend that had, I think, ALCs your knee.
I think so. ACL?
ACL.
Okay.
He had ACL surgery. Okay. He was out for 6 months. And so I was like getting close to the end of 2 months. And I was like, I don't know how he did that. I don't know how he did 6 months.
Cause that's a long time. ACL injuries are bad too.
So, and I think it's different because it's like, you can't physically move, whereas mine was just my heart's restarting. But yeah, so that was a very long winded explanation of everything that was happening. It's August now. I'm going to make it to 30. It's going to be great. And It's a new way of life, but I would think the worst is kind of past at this point.
Yeah, that's crazy too, that they literally open you up, take your heart out, collapse your lungs, and they put it back in.
And then restart. Yeah.
And restart your heart.
Yeah.
That is insane. And you survived that at not even 30 years old. And on top of that, you also had a cancerous tumor that had to get removed. And luckily, you didn't have to get chemo.
Mm-hmm.
You're back in the gym working out. Dude, that is pretty crazy. And on top of that, you got married, you went on a honeymoon.
Someone said, they're like, that's such a positive thing to happen in the middle of all this.
Yes.
As stressful as it was to plan, what a way to focus on something wonderful around these other things.
Exactly. It was kind of like gave you something to a healthy distraction as well. And something to be like, well, this is motivation to get through this as well. And also forces you to enjoy it.
Exactly.
Which is rough. You've been through a lot, my man.
Thanks.
That is insane. So tell us a little bit about, you know, how CrossFit training prepared you physically and mentally for all these kind of challenges, both with the surgery, the recovery, and with the wedding planning on top of it.
Yeah. So the training, I think, first of all, I think doing CrossFit specifically beyond just being an athlete, everything that led me to CrossFit, it gives you a lower resting heart rate. It gives you, you know, you work out at this high intensity for a little bit so that the rest of the time you're like doing very well and everything's working correctly. Because I think if my heart had to work harder on a normal basis, things would have progressed a lot faster.
Yeah.
So because I was in CrossFit, it gave me longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it let my heart work better for most of the time.
Now, right.
Because I have a mom that just wanted to find some kind of explanation. They told me it was congenital. They're like, you were born with this. It was always going to happen. But, you know, that's such a strange thing where it's like, it can be a scary thing where it's like, you had no control. There was none of your will was going to affect any of this. And so my mom was trying to blame CrossFit. I was drinking like rainstorms. So it's like, oh, the energy in that, all these things where it was very nice to have Caffarelli and the hospital doctor say, no, this was going to happen no matter what. They were both saying like nothing accelerated it, like nothing brought us to this point. It was.
Yeah.
And so as scary as it can be, it then also gives me kind of this ability to live with it easier and also kind of ignore it. Cause it's like, I was living pretty fine. So it didn't, I mean, despite what the surgery entails, like I didn't need to, nothing was wrong with my diet. Nothing was wrong with my blood pressure, my cholesterol, all this stuff.
Right.
And so that helped. But, like I said too, I think CrossFit was literally like the saving thing, because if I didn't come here, would have never met Cal Farrelly.
Yeah.
Who he's also then going somewhere else now. So again, perfect lineup to get him right at the end of his tenure here in Newport. But I think too, it gave me something to look forward to after. Like the second I found out was not like I'm done. It was like, all right, how long is it going to be before I can work out again?
Right.
And theoretically, I should pass where I was before. Because my heart was working harder than it needed to and not getting as much out of it, I was getting winded. And I always thought, I have terrible cardiovascular endurance.
Yeah.
I brought it up multiple times.
I remember us talking about it. Like, we actually had sit down one-on-one talks, and you're like, man, I'm having a hard time breathing. And I'm just like, oh, okay. Like, you know, maybe we just need to implement more like slow, longer stuff just to get more oxygen in your system. I remember specifically talking with you about that. And then come to find out it wasn't your fault.
That's where, and I don't want to let that be the thought process, you know? Like, it's good to have the reason, but not focus on it. Cause yeah, I would be like heavy workouts all day, burpees, double unders, toes to bars. I'm done so fast. But I'm rambling. I don't know where. Oh, CrossFit being important. Yeah, it gave me the goal to get back in and get better, because now I shouldn't be getting winded like that. My cardiovascular endurance is all on me now.
Yeah.
If I still suck, that it's because I suck, not because I'm not working hard.
Yeah, not because your valve is all messed up.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's pretty crazy. And yeah, it's the cool thing is that, you know, I wasn't expecting you to be back this quickly. You know, I thought for sure I wouldn't see you till next year. I knew you were gonna find your way back to us, but I'm like, he's gonna take his time. And then when I got your text, like a few weeks ago, I was blown away. I'm like, oh my God, he's cleared to come back. I didn't even think he would be cleared for a while to even exercise, like mm-hmm. to at least come back to here. Like, I thought maybe you could walk and maybe do some light stuff, but it was great news to like how fast you recovered. And on top of that, you know, it's crazy that you went through so much in such a short amount of time to the point where you are literally at 100% months later.
Yeah.
Like from it happened, like the same year you went from cancer, open heart surgery, and you're back.
It's yeah. Cause it'll be 100% right now. It's like, it's, you know, that weird thing where it's like the levels are normal, but I'm not in remission technically mm-hmm. for 2 years.
Okay.
And then same with this, where I'm doing some workouts now and they're very heavily scaled. And I remember walking in being like, I feel so good. I'm walking 5 miles. I think this is going to be it's going to be more of a fight for me to not push.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I would get to the end of these workouts and I'd be like, oh my God, this is correct. This is where I need to be right now.
Yeah.
So that one helps, two, like again, proves that it was real. It happened. It had an effect. And three, it's like starting from zero. It's like, you know, you play a game and you get to the end, you beat it. You're like level 90, 100 or something. But you start the sequel, it throws you right back down to level yeah. zero. You have that grind all the way up again. So that was exciting for me.
Yeah. And it is good that, I mean, I always find that the climb is more exciting and more fun than when you finally reach the peak,
mm-hmm.
you know, because...
If you ever do.
If you ever do, exactly. And you know, I did peak in my late 20s for my fitness, because that's when I was still competing and everything. But then, and then I kind of took a break, but now I'm like kind of like on the rebuild, which is more fun again, because now I'm like, okay, I kind of took a little step back. And then now it's like, I'm rebuilding, and it's fun to be chasing people, you know, in, you know, my own members and having them beat me at workouts. And I'm like, this is actually fun, because now, not that I was super good before, but now it's like, okay, it's fun to push them, and then they can push me, and then we can also level up together and then climb that ladder again.
And it gives everyone in the gym a goal now, because I think, like, you know, there's a bit of mythology around the owner, especially if the owner just is always the best.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they can never be beat, then it's more legend. And it's like, oh yeah, well, that's why they own the gym, blah, blah, blah. If you have people that are beating you, then everyone can have that goal. Everyone can be like, if I work hard enough, I'll beat Matt. And,
yeah.
And I think as a gym owner, I think that can also be a very good thing to look at. But yeah, it's interesting you say you're on the rebuild, because it's one, I can imagine how demoralizing it can get, because I'm like, I think you don't know your peak until after you peak.
Mm-hmm.
And so one, it can be demoralizing when you're like, oh yeah, I'm getting worse.
Yeah.
And so how much of a positive spin to put on it, where you're like, all right, I just need to redefine my goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can be happy about it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly what I do, because I did fight through that,
mm-hmm.
through some times of being like, oh man, I'm actually getting worse. But then, you know, Caitlin did a good job of bringing me back down to earth and being like, well, you're not training twice a day. You're not on a structured training program, in terms of, like, you know, you don't have a coach anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have, you have three kids now, and you don't sleep as well, and you focus more on the business, and you're focused more on providing for your family. And you're focused more on helping other people in the gym instead of just only worrying about yourself. And that was a really good for me too, because I'm like, and then I redefined success as this in terms of fitness, was that if I can make other people better than I am, then I'm a successful coach. Because when you think about it, like, if I can't help other people become better than me, then what kind of a coach am I? Mm-hmm. I'm not that good of a coach. Because if I can do it for myself, then that means I'm only focused on me. But if I can make you more fit than me, if I can make you more balanced in your fitness than me, and if I can help you stay more motivated for longer than I am, then, you know, that's my end game as a coach, is to make you better, it's not about me.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I still should be fit, obviously, but
well, even to be that high caliber with everything you just described, like, I'm glad you gave me that reality check. I admire all parents that can do it, because, like, it's yes and no. It's only an hour, but it is an hour that revolves around kids at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, you had like six other things, and to still be one of the top performers at the gym is amazing to see.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a lot of fun. I don't know what I would do without it, because, you know, I consume my own service because I need it, because I'm just like everybody else. I'm stressed out. I don't have a ton of time, even though I'm at the gym all day. But because I am at the gym all day, the last thing I want to do is work out. And so it's nice that I can just turn my brain off for 1 hour, just like everybody else, and be a member and work out and do the class workout, and then just be done and move on with my day. Anyway, back to you, because, I mean, this is about you, not about me.
No, I mean, well, you said turn your brain off. I think that's one of the best things about CrossFit. Like, when you're just on your own, you have to build your own workouts. You have to really struggle, like, focus about it. When CrossFit, you just show up, someone else tells you what to do, you're around a bunch of people. It's so I'm really glad I got there.
No, I'm so happy you're with us. You're such a great member, and I'm like, it really does show that sometimes things really do align the right, because, like, can you imagine what would have happened if you weren't at Red Wolf?
Oh yeah, I try not to, because it's like, because there's so many what ifs, but yeah, same thing where it's like, I don't think about the specifics of the surgery. I was asleep during it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to think about the images that were probably being seen by doctors and stuff. And gratefully, I don't have to. So, I couldn't imagine what it was, nor do I really try to, because I'm just trying to be so grateful that I was, and that I had what I had.
Yeah, no, it's crazy that you came to me, and then we had that conversation. I was like, hey, I know someone. And he's one of the best heart surgeons in the country.
Yeah.
And it was like, and then I was so happy when you were able to get in with him. And then you texted me and you were like, hey, I got in with, mm-hmm. with.
Yeah, and it's like same day and everything. He was like, hey, he has an opening. He's done with surgery. Can you come in at this time?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do it.
Oh my God. I'm so happy that Tony was the one to do it for you. So, but before your diagnosis, did you ever really imagine that your fitness journey would be so crucial to your survival with this?
No. I think on some level, because I just never expected, dreamed this. I've never broken a bone, never went to that was the first time I went to the hospital. And then of course I went like four times in the matter of a couple months, but I'd only ever been to the hospital to visit people. Like I said, never broke a bone, never really, I had allergy issues, which is what turned into my migraines. But other than that, I was pretty healthy. And so fitness and stuff was more for myself. It was from being a natural athlete and doing all these other things that kind of, again, like I said, there was a process to get to Red Wolf, but that being the end was so nice because it gives you all the goals you need. Gives you the community you need. It's a third home, essentially. That's what it is. And I can only be very, very grateful that, again, I can only thank the way that it happened for it to have played such a pivotal role. And again, just always live with that gratefulness of it being so connected, because I can't and won't imagine how not doing any one of those one things would have never got me here.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. And let's not think about other scenarios. that's awesome. You know, how has your perspective on health and fitness changed after, you know, going through this ordeal?
Definitely a much bigger fan of getting yourself checked out every year. You know, that time I went to the migraine appointment, like I hadn't gotten a physical in like a year or two, so it's something that might have gotten caught earlier, but again, you feel fine. You know, why are you gonna go? There's less of a need to go check it out. And so now when I'm forced to go check out more often, but two, it's like I told my family, I was like, hey, there's an 8-9% chance that you have this congenital too. But finding out how lucky I was to be so healthy in other aspects, it becomes like, all right, how do I keep that? How do I make sure that stays the case apart from all the new issues that I'll have to deal with for the rest of my life? So that for sure, lifestyle is just different because, you know, in the short term, there's a new, I have to rebuild. And in the long term, it just, a lot of it not being my fault makes it a lot easier to accept. You know, right. I never wanted to be the guy, like a person that relied on meds my whole life. Like I had that kind of fear for whatever reason, mainly because I think it's like, oh, if you don't do the right things, you're going to get high blood pressure. That's why you need high blood pressure meds. You're going to, you know, your diet, your lifestyle is going to get you at too high of these levels where then you need stuff to bring it down. Whereas this is like, hey, your blood needs to be this thin because if not, you'll stroke out with the valve. And hey, you need this heart med right now because we're rebuilding, your heart's, you know, building itself back up. And so that's just, I'm like, yeah, I don't have a choice for that. Like,
yeah,
that just is what it is regardless of what I did.
Yeah, right.
And now it's just, now it's making sure I don't aggravate it in any way.
Yeah. No, 100%. And, well, I mean, has that changed anything about your fitness goals moving forward, or are your goals pretty much the same?
Yes. I mean, I was already working on a lot of stuff that I wanted to do. If anything, I'm not going to say it's a setback because it's a rebuild, but I'm hoping now that when I hit that level again, those original goals will be more attainable. Because, you know, I was someone that could RX, I was flirting with RX Plus, but either wasn't strong enough or didn't have the endurance to be able to last through those workouts. So now it's like, oh, when I hit that level, it should be a little bit easier now, but it's just going to, you know, I'm like, for the month of August to September, I don't want to go more than 50 pounds just to be safe. Cause that's the other thing. I'm not safe. if I can push myself, I will push myself again. Cause I never had a consequence happen to it. Having that consequence kind of gives you some good caution into your life, gives you some good awareness and the ability to really take a look and be like, is this good? Am I just getting my fix now at the cost? I used to say, because I'd get terrible sleep, and I'd be like, oh, I'll deal with it in 20 years. I'll deal with it in 30 years. You know, I can sleep five, six hours now, and I'll just deal with it when I'm 50. Now I've had that consequence happen where luckily I have a mechanical valve. I won't need another surgery, theoretically. But that's where it's like, I have to live my life well so that I don't mess with that thing.
Yeah.
Because I don't ever want to do that again.
I hear you.
I cannot. They told me, they were like, oh, you're younger, so your body's going to react more strongly, and that's why the pain's going to be where it is. I can't imagine children. I can't imagine like elderly people having to go through that, you know, babies, because usually with my case, they find that when you're born and then they'll do something right away.
Oh, okay.
I'm like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, theoretically at the peak, and that was so awful. I can't imagine being down either side of the bell curve.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, but moving forward, it's more so just accepting where I am, enjoying that rebuild, and then having more goals, having better goals when I get back to that level, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I really like what you talked about specifically when you talked about consequences and how you are just more aware of, like, I'm sure you're more hyper aware of what you're eating. You're more, that's why you're back in the gym already,
yeah,
running around, because I mean, if we don't take care of ourselves long-term, what's going to happen? Like, I mean, the number one killers are heart disease and cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you had a heart problem and you pretty much had cancer. So already at 30, and then that's really scary. It gives you a good wake up call, but in a way it's a blessing that you did have it at this age, because you're a healing machine still. You're not too old. You're not too young.
Exactly.
Your body can take it. You've been working out. So your body again can handle a little bit more physical stress, which is great. And on top of that, now you have that life lesson that you can carry with you for the rest of your life, and yeah, that will make better choices. Similar to you, you know, when I had my problem, when I was 20, I had a condition called Doudla-Foy's lesion, which is also which is just like you, which is genetic, but
yeah,
mine wasn't heart, but mine was with a shallow blood vessel in my stomach.
Oh, wow.
And an ulcer formed over on top of it, and I was getting a ton of pain, like up here.
Was it like squeezing the...
It wasn't squeezing, but it ruptured the blood vessel.
Ugh.
So I was slowly bleeding out internally, and they didn't know. They knew I was, and I ended up losing so much blood to where I passed out, and I had to be taken in an ambulance and everything, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong. I lost like 2/3 of my blood. I was very close to cardiac arrest.
I was saying, you could still be alive with that much blood gone?
Barely.
Oh my God.
I do remember I was in the ER and I could barely, like, I was like so disoriented. I was cold. You know that, it's just like in the movies, like you're disoriented, you're cold, you can't, it's hard to breathe, and like your heart's beating super fast, and I'm just like, something's up.
Except
like
shot,
obviously,
man.
And then when they, I remember the ER doctor came in, looked at me and goes, you can go into cardiac arrest any moment. We need to start blood transfusions right away. They're like, you lost about 2/3 of your blood. They're like, they had a hard time even getting a sample to figure out what blood type I was.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They were like, that's how low blood you are.
They couldn't get it off like the ground that you were bleeding into or whatever?
No, it was internal.
Oh.
Yeah. So I know that would have been funny. And then, yeah, dude, I went through 18 units of blood in the hospital over a matter of a week. Yeah, it was bad. And then I won't go into two more details. But then again, 10 years later, I had sepsis, and I was in the hospital for a week too. And then Tony visited me in the hospital. I mean, he couldn't do anything.
But... Which one's sepsis?
So sepsis is a blood infection, essentially.
Oh my God.
Yeah, blood poisoning, okay, essentially. So I could have went into septic shock. If I waited another 24 hours, I would have died for sure. And then, because I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just had like a fever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to like urgent care or something, and they're like, you should go to the ER. And then I'm like, okay. I was like, what's up? And then when there, they couldn't figure out what was wrong either. And then, so both those experiences have led me to take my health and fitness so seriously. And like, I watch what I eat. I watch what I drink. I still have my good times, of course.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like...
Moderation.
It's, you know, you don't want to go through that ever again.
Yeah.
I hate the hospital.
It's such a, because it's like, it's a version of... learning that the stove is hot, so because you've touched it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, there's a weird spin because both of our things were genetic. So it was less us touching the stove and more someone pouring the boiling water on us.
Yes.
And you learn by osmosis. You're like, all right, that sucked. That must be hot. I'm gonna stay away from that.
Yeah, 100%. And I don't want to. Also, it just became like, I just really hated the hospital. I did, because I was extended stays. How long were you in the hospital for?
I was in 5 days the first time, 3 days when I got diagnosed with the tumor. The surgery was just an evening, and then 6 days after the heart surgery.
Yeah.
And that one was the worst, but yeah, it's just...
It's not fun.
The only funny thing we got out of it was, again, right past the wedding... So we started joking around that we were like, oh, we had our honeymoon in a 5-star place. We had an ocean view because it's Newport, room service.
Yeah, that's funny.
Like butlers with our nurses and stuff. But I'm like, that's a funny joke. I'd still not ever do that in exchange for not making that joke.
Yeah, no, yeah. I never want to go back to the hospital for a long time. And then I was actually doing research recently. And I was just curious on how long, on average, at the end of someone's life, that they either live with some sort of assisted living, or that they're living with some sort of physical ailment that they're dealing with. And it says on average is 10 to 15 years of the end of your life that you're dealing. You either have to have some sort of assistance with your living situation, or you are having some sort of a physical problem that you will need medical treatment for. And I didn't realize it was that long. So even more so, I want to condense that time down to a year at the most. Or preferably, I would rather just die. Be completely mobile. And then one day, it's just like, oh, I just keel over and die. They're like, oh, well, okay. Guess he's dead. Like, he was fine, and then he wasn't. Yeah. Like, I want it to be fast. I don't want to die a slow death. And, you know, there's really no good way to die.
No.
But when you were that close to it, and you realize this really sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other things that when I'm done with this that I can do to at least prevent this or delay this as long as possible. I don't want to die of heart disease. I don't want to die of, I just don't want to control the controllables and, mm-hmm. and not have to deal with potentially that. And like, I'm going to do whatever I can to delay that as long as possible.
Yeah. I mean, that's what comes with the whole debate of DNRs and, you know, like all these ideas of the person versus everyone around them being like, no, we want to keep you. And they're like, no, I please don't.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, this, I always think it, I have to say this just because I get very disappointed sometimes in people. And I'm going to be very candid here that so every once in a while we get someone coming to the gym who wants to check it out. And then, we do like the InBody scan with them. And then I'll see that, you know, some of them are like 20 years old. And they'll have 50% body fat. Their visceral level will be at 20, which is the max it can go.
Yeah.
And they have 100 pounds of body fat mass. And then I tell them exactly, I'm like, dude, you are 20 years old and this is a major problem. Like, you are setting yourself up for failure and you will die it much earlier than you want. And you're not going to live a very fun, it's not going to be very fun either.
Yeah.
And you have to do something about this now before you're not even mobile enough to even do it. And like, you're going to be stuck on medications, you'll be doing all this, and you're going to be spending even more money with all the medical help you have, with all the medical stuff that you'll need on top of it. And then sometimes they'll look at me and be like, yeah, I'll just deal with that when it happens. I'm like, you have no idea what you're in for.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea the fight that it's going to be. And right now you are physically able to do something about it and you're still choosing not to. And it really sucks as a coach to see that, to be able to see their future already and know exactly what's going to happen. And then for them to take zero action on it just because that they just don't want to do it.
So is it like they come in? Cause I mean, they showed up for the InBody scan for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, so do they get those results and then they're just like, ah, it's not worth it. I'm just not going to.
It's usually a money or a time issue.
Okay.
But even with my sepsis thing, it was a $60,000 medical bill just for sepsis.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you're going to pay now or pay later. This is a lot less money than going to the hospital. I mean, even with insurance, like if it.
I know. Yeah. I see numbers and letters I get right now and they all say, you don't have to do anything now, but I'm seeing those numbers. I'm like, I really hope my insurance is doing its job right now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, obviously your life is worth it.
Exactly.
But at the same time, it's like, if you could prevent that from happening just by simply working out and working out with a coach, why wouldn't you take advantage of that?
Yeah.
Especially when you didn't even know this was a problem in the first place. Like half the time, actually, I would say all the time, they come in, they don't even know what visceral fat is. They don't even know that this is even a problem. And then I present it to them. I'm like, hey, like we need to do this. We should have some sort of one-on-one training simply because it will accelerate this because we need to start hammering at this right away. And then they simply either don't want to pay it or they say that they don't have time. And I'm like, you're not going to have time regardless pretty soon if you don't do something. So
is that a harder thing? Is that an easier thing to be disappointed in? Because it's like, you know, you say that and I'm like, oh, I just said the same thing about like not getting enough sleep. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's a smaller thing in a productive plan than like someone that is just wholesale denying you know, any plan.
Well, for me, it's more just like, what did I do wrong to where I couldn't help this person? So it's not even about, it's more just like, I want to help them because this is a problem.
Yeah.
And I'm a coach and I want to help people.
And tough to give hard truths and still have
it is.
Trust you and want your help.
It is. And it's my job to tell them. You know, it's, you know, I can't sugarcoat it. And I do tell them that up front. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm not trying to make you feel bad about your decisions. However, the decisions you are currently making is it led you to this. In order to remedy this, we need to do this. This is your best solution based on my, you know, expert opinion. And then they'll look at it and they'll be like, I don't want to do personal training or I don't want to do this. I want to do that. I'm like, well, why'd you come in?
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you even here? Like you clearly know that there's some sort of a problem and you're not going to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, I think that people, when it does take time, when it is time to take that leap, that they're more afraid of they just don't want to look stupid in front of other people, which is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, pick your pain, right? You can have the pain of living a super unhealthy life and eventually dying at a much earlier age and not a fun way, or you can be somewhat embarrassed, but no one is really judging you anyways. And once you get over that mental hump, then, you know, you'll be totally fine.
Yeah. And that's where I think it's so nice with the bring a friend days, or if there's like a free trial or something, that's, then you have no excuse on looking stupid or seeing how it's going to feel when your fear is looking stupid.
Yeah.
Because you show up for free that day. And if you can't get over that hill, you can't get over that hill, but you had the choice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But, you know, just in your opinion, though, like, you know, what message would you give someone who might be facing like a health crisis, like maybe not even a health problem, but let's say they were 50% body fat, they were going down the road, they're going to get heart disease, they're going to get cancer. You know, what would, in terms of the importance of staying active and living a healthy lifestyle, what would you tell them?
No matter what, it's going to balance itself out. Like, that's where it's like you say, you know, your sepsis procedure costs $60,000. You know, mine costs hundreds of thousands. If we end up having to pay that, the alternative with someone like that at 20 years old with that much body fat and stuff like that, yeah, it's not all at once, but the meds that they need to start taking, the problems that they end up start having over the course of 40 to 60 years, that's going to add up to about the same amount that we had to get for one week, one couple of days, one month or two of issues. That's an extreme. The main thing I would say is just like, figure out what works with you, what works for you, and just really, like, you have to motivate yourself. Like, you can't, a lot of people only do stuff because someone else is relying on them and they have no accountability to themselves. This is like the one area where you can't do that, really. Like,
right.
People, like, you know, you're their coach and they can be like, oh, I come in because I don't want you to be mad at me if I'm not coming in. Yeah, but I think you're more disappointed and you're like, it's you, dude. Like, you gotta want to do what you want. You gotta have your own goals. And I think a lot of people do. But it'll balance out and the motivation is all on yourself and you can adapt to, you can scale. You know, I was a natural athlete. I hated the gym. I was terrified of barbells. I didn't want any of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would do anything else I could, play tennis, rock climb, do any sport that exercised me without sitting in a gym and doing those weights. I flirted with it in college. It was fine. And then once I got out of college, I went to a CrossFit gym. I did the camp first.
Okay.
Because I was just like, that's still too much for me. The barbells are scary.
Mm-hmm.
Let me start here, do a little bit of that. And then when I feel good, I'll move over. And of course, you know, my friend's the one who pulled me into that gym. He was like, you don't have to do that. You can, the same way you've ramped up, you can start here and move on. I just needed that time at the gym for myself. And I was like, I'm going to get there. I just need this first. Did it 2 months, I think, and then joined the gym mid-February. And then the second week I was there doing the open, basically.
Yeah. And now look at you.
Exactly.
And I mean, you got strong real quick too.
You
became kind of known as pretty good with the barbell.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because I would have never guessed that you were scared of the barbell based on when I've coached you in classes and I see you throwing on one. I'm like, dang, David.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Luckily that's a little bit of genetics because I think with that, one of those open workouts had a max out. And again, a week in, I was able to do 175. Terrible, awful form, mainly just pulling it up. But that was kind of one of the first sparks where I was like, oh, I'm kind of good at this.
Yeah.
I have a base, you know, foundation to go off of now that's a little better than maybe some other people. Let's not squander that. Let's chase it.
Man, I would have never guessed that you were afraid of the barbell.
I was terrified.
Really?
Yeah, mainly I think for the reasons, you know, I was mainly seeing people do, you know, did you put the bar on you and then put yourself in a bunch of situations where it can crush you? So, you know, you put it in the push press, not push press. Why am I blanking?
Bench press?
Bench press.
Okay.
That can fall and smash your chest. You know, you do snatches that can fall and hit your head. Now, granted, you learn it correctly, it's never going to happen because you know how to move your body.
Mm-hmm.
Even this, you know, even the clean and jerks. There's so many ways for it to really injure you that I was just like, no thanks. And it took a lot of training. It took a lot of trust in my coaches to really love it and then be excited about it and really make that one of my main goals, was always getting more and more.
Wow. So what would you say is a big turning point that made you not intimidated with the barbell?
I think being in a CrossFit gym.
Okay.
And because like I said, the camp was all body weight. It was all like dumbbells and stuff like that, with some basic like squat stuff, which when I was there, I used the sleeve. People had their opinions about the sleeve, and I was like, I don't care. I don't want to be in pain. I'm going to use it until I feel good about myself that I don't need it. But going in, I knew there was going to be barbell. So I had all that time to come to terms with it and just figure out how to live with it instead of living fear of it. So that was, it's all, for the main part, it's all psychological. It's all you accepting it rather than whether that's birth by fire, you know, baptism by fire, or if you need like a process to really come to terms with it. But if you don't enjoy it, if you haven't done that when you start it, it's not going to stick.
Yeah.
It's not going to last.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Okay. Fantastic. No, it was cool for me to hear that, that transition, because like I said, I was like, I would never would have guessed. So that was the first time you touched a barbell. Was that Red Wolf?
Yeah. No, I went to a gym before.
Well, I mean like officially like lifting heavy barbell.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I would have never guessed that.
Yeah. When I was hitting 225 and then breaking that plateau, which I was at for a while. Yeah, that was all here.
Wow.
And that was
fantastic. And you,
that was wrong,
man.
From the fantastic coaching you guys have and like being able to pinpoint things and really learning that overload progression rather than just like doing the workouts.
Yeah.
And knowing those extra movements, it all, like that's where it really came in.
Right. No, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
So before we wrap things up here, what is next for you? Looking forward, tell us what's in your future in terms of fitness, health, whatever your future is, like now that all this is behind you.
Yeah.
You know, what's next for David?
So the main thing was, like, I did a sprint triathlon last year and I was like, cool, I'm going to do that at 29. I'm going to do a triathlon at 30. That was in October. Obviously, it's not going to happen now.
Yeah.
So there was a minute where I was like, maybe I can do it. Like, it'll just take 12 hours. But I can still do all the movements and stuff. And Tony was very quick to be like, no, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You need to wait a year, do it for 31. So that's my goal, is to do the triathlon at some point next year. Otherwise, you know, I'm just like a dude. I'm just like some nerd, the engineer that just grew up with athletics and I just love it. It's another goal setting thing. It's another way to just feel good about myself, where it's like, if I don't go to the gym for a day or two, you feel it in your body and you're just like, ugh. So it's just like, again, rebuilding. This month is working up to 50 pounds and then I'll be building back to those milestones I had before, and really just looking to you guys I've already looked to you guys for help. You know, I came in and if I don't feel comfortable with the workout, I do the build and burn, but I'm going to figure out, like, hey, how would I have done that? You know, what's the way for me to do that now? Which you guys always have an answer for, and it's always a great answer. So that's kind of what looks forward for me, and I'm just excited. I'm pumped for it.
I'm pumped to have you back, my man. So any final words of wisdom that you want to tell everyone before we close things out?
Failure is the greatest teacher. You're not going to get anywhere until you fail. Like that, if you one shot everything, you're not pushing hard enough. You know? That and you're never going to be done. I think like CrossFit is really big on that. There's always something else to work on. I'm going to get back to where I was. I still need to learn ring muscle ups. I still need to like tie together, you know, bar muscle ups. I need to get faster at a lot of movements. So there's always something.
Wow. That is a fantastic story, David. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you.
That's crazy. I wish I had a better...
I colored a bunch about you, too, so it was really cool.
Fun. We'll have to have you back on again, buddy. Yeah. We'll talk about, hopefully, something more fun, too. Actually, how about we schedule one in a year from now, and we'll see where you're at. Yeah.
When you're following.
Yeah, we'll interview you after you do your triathlon.
There we go.
And There we go. And we'll remind you that, hey, remember that one time we had you on the podcast after your surgery?
Yeah.
After both surgeries, I should say. All right. Awesome, buddy. Well, thank you so much for listening. If this was helpful, please leave us a 5-star review so we know to make more content just like this. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Red Wolf CrossFit and DM your content suggestions there. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, good luck. Have fun. Nailed it.